Broadcasting live from atop the Rocky Mountains, the crossroads of the West. You are listening to the Liberty Roundtable Radio Talk Show.
Happy to have you along, my fellow Americans. Sam Bushman and Kirk Cosby live on your radio with hard-hitting news the networks refuse to use. It all continues now. This is the broadcast for January 13th in the year of our Lord, 2015. It's hour 2 at 2, and our goal always to protect life, liberty, and property, and to promote God, family, and country. In the traditions of our founders, it's incredibly simple. We use the blueprint for liberty, the supreme law of the land, as our guide. Never revolution, but always restoration of the greatest country on the face of the earth. We believe the checks and balances put in place by our founders were inspired of the Almighty and brilliant, to say the least, ladies and gentlemen. And that's why we don't want a revolution. We do want a restoration of the principles that made America the greatest country on the face of the earth, though. And we do see the blueprint to return there to those principles. All right, a couple of quick things. Kirk Cosby's with me. Welcome to the broadcast, sir.
Buenos dias. Greetings and salutations. Howdy, howdy, howdy. Thank you, Sam.
You're very welcome, sir. First off, a couple of quick news tidbits, then our guest. First news tidbit, former Sheriff Richard Mack has a heart attack, ladies and gentlemen. He is doing well. I just talked to him last night, and I'll give you the quick 30-second story. He was doing great yesterday. He went and got some running shoes, and he went to the gym, and he did 20-plus sit-ups, and then he got ready to go over to the treadmill, and he got on the treadmill, and he started having a little bit of pain in his heart, and he kind of thought, man, I got heartburn. And within 30 seconds, though, he knew, because he had had a heart attack about 10 years ago, too, by the way. He knew that it wasn't going well, and so he got off the treadmill, and everybody said, call the ambulance. And he said, I'm not doing that. They'll come too late. I'm not doing well. So he literally drove himself to the hospital, got there, bunch of people in line in front of him. He walked up to the front of the line, cut in front of everybody, and said, you know what, guys, I'm going to die if you don't help me now. They put him on an EKG, said, you know what, you're in the middle of a serious problem. They did an operation. They put a stent in, and now he's in a hotel room recovering. And I talked to him, and the first thing I said to him, Kirk Crosby.
You said a hotel room? Do you mean a hospital
I said
room?
Hospital. Did I say hotel?
Yeah, you said hotel room, and I thought that'd be a good move. Hospital room. You know, because it's a lot cheaper than a hospital, but at least you wouldn't get that much treatment.
But I called him when he was in the hospital last night, and I said, I think the problem is a deficiency of pupusas, Kirk. And he laughed, and he said, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah, pupusa shortage.
So he's still Richard Mack, still got his personality, doing very well. They say he'll be home in a couple of days. So that's the good news piece, is that he's doing well. And thank heavens for that. But he did have a heart attack, so we wanted to report that. Our prayers are with him, and we beg for you to pray for him as well. He is doing well, though, just so you know. All right, also, quick news tidbit for you. Meet the Mormons film to now show in church visitor centers. This is an interesting story, Kurt. Meet the Mormons film went in theaters. It was a blockbuster film at the time, a couple of months ago. And the church did not keep any of the money that it received from that film. They donated it to charitable organizations, etc. But they say now, in an effort to make Meet the Mormons, the film, more accessible to more people around the world, theaters in all visitor centers and church historic sites of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints will be showing the Meet the Mormons film. It started Jan 1 this year. So that's available now for free. So first they show it in theaters and raise a bunch of money, but then all the money goes to charities, and now they're showing it for free in their visitor centers if people want to watch it. So there you have that. I thought that was kind of interesting. Alan Phillips, our guest, VaccineRights.com. Welcome to the Liberty Roundtable, sir.
Pleasure and honor to be back with you, as always, Sam. And good morning to you, Kirk, as well.
Did you see the Meet the Mormons film?
I haven't.
All right. Well, anyway, it was, you know, it took top the numbers in many of the theaters across the country a couple of months ago when it came out.
That's right. The Rotten Tomatoes guys, they give it like 11%, but they say the audience score, they got 91% liked it. So, you know, I guess that's the way it always is. The professionals, they tell you it's, you know, not very good, and then you go and you go, I like it. You know,
well, I've learned from experience, whatever they don't like, I like it. Whatever they like, I run from. But that's just me. Now, you got a question, though, about the film or whatever? Alan?
No, I didn't. But, yeah, I just said you piqued my curiosity, so.
Yeah. Anyway, Meet the Mormons film, just a quick 30-second on it. What it is, it's a... The problem is that there's all kinds of misnomers out there about the members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, nicknamed the Mormons. And there's so much confusion about what they believe and who they are and everything else. And, you know, you got these multiple wives TV series out there, and you got all this kind of stuff, and where it's been very confusing about what the Mormons really believe. You had that Broadway play about the Mormons, which was not very flattering. They kind of mocked the Mormons as well. And so the Mormon church said, all right, we're going to put together a video just showing you who we are. And so the movie, they were planning to just show it in their visitor centers. If people came to visit the Mormon facilities and learn about it or whatever, then it would be there. But they got talked into showing it in theaters, and it did very well. The point is, it follows about six families who are happen to be Mormons, and it just basically chronicles their lives and who they are and what they do and et cetera, et cetera. And so you kind of understand their belief systems, what they do, what they believe, and why. And anyway, pretty a lot of people say they like the film. Doesn't mean someone's going to be a Mormon if they watch it. It just means they're going to kind of learn what they believe and why. And the reason I bring it up is because when it hits the mainstream and it gets shown in theaters across the country, I don't see how you ignore it, you know?
Anyway, well, and the really very interesting thing, even though you mentioned it, is that the net proceeds, that means, any of the, quote, money made by the movie, go to the American Red Cross.
Yeah, I just said charitable organizations, but yeah, you're right, Red Cross.
It was just very interesting to me that that's how that would all work out.
Anyway, very interesting indeed. All right, we've got a serious issue. When it comes to vaccines, and the concern about the issue really is force, Alan Phillips. And when it comes to flu and force, we're seeing more and more of this, aren't we?
This is, there are multiple layers and facets to the vaccine injury controversy, and all of it in terms of the pharmaceutical agenda is quite aggressive, but one of the single biggest ones that's been playing out over the last few years now is the influenza vaccine, and there's been a huge push, more than one level or aspect, but a huge push on vaccines, influenza vaccines, in the healthcare community. And over the last, maybe 3 or 4 years primarily at this point, every year a whole new wave, if you will, of hospitals around the country go from recommendation to mandating the influenza vaccine for their employees. Now, you know, most of us are not healthcare workers and probably, you know, may be starting to wander off already, but I want to reel you back in, grab your attention here, because this stems at one level from the Department of Health and Human Services, the federal Department of Health and Human Services Healthy People 2020 initiative. They have many goals there, but one of these goals that they have set is to vaccinate 90% of the nation's healthcare workers with the influenza vaccine annually by 2020. But they have a separate goal to vaccinate 80% of the rest of the adult population. So basically, all of us have targets on our backs. And the mandate for this particular vaccine is just nuts, Sam. There are multiple mainstream medical sources, peer review, published literature, and other sources that essentially tell us that the flu vaccines are of very questionable effectiveness. In fact, there are studies showing that they...
Hey, Alan, I've already got my mind made up. I don't want you bugging me with the facts, man.
Well, as you're so fond of saying, and you always say it so eloquently, Sam, I really have to give you credit for this. We're not telling people that they should or shouldn't get vaccinated, or at least that's not our purpose here. Our purpose is to support the right to make an informed choice. And if you want to go get the vaccine, your mind's already made up, more power to you. You know, my job isn't to tell you what to do. My job is to hopefully enable you to see that there's a good reason to look closely at the issue. But if your choice, of course not you personally, Sam, but if somebody's choice at the end of the day is they don't want to be bothered with the facts, then go ahead and get your shot and more power to you. But what I'm saying is for those who really want to know what's going on and care what they put into their bodies and care about the possible effects, positive or negative, then there is a substantial body of information, mainstream medical sources. Now, this is not some sort of conspiracy theory that says the vaccines not only are of questionable effectiveness, but they may actually be counterproductive, Sam, there's a study that looked at 9 to 15 year olds, and they found that they, if they got an influenza vaccine, they had 3 to 4 times the rate of flu-like illnesses. Now, maybe not influenza specifically in terms of the strains in the vaccine, but I tell you, Sam, as a layperson with respect to the medical community, the flu is the flu, and there are over 200 viruses that cause flu-like symptoms, and if getting a vaccine that has 3 or 4 strains in it that's going to supposedly protect me from means I have 3 or 4 times the risk of getting one of the other 196 viral strains that's going to cause a flu-like illness, I'll do without the vaccine. But it's not even just a question of is it effective or is it minimally effective, because the CDC has been very defensive this year in saying, on the one hand, admitting that, oops, some of the viruses have mutated and now the vaccine doesn't protect as well. But they keep saying, well, some protection is better than none and you should get the vaccine anyway. Translation, we don't want to lose any money on this, so go ahead and get it and we'll see if we can do better next year. But it's of questionable effect, and this may even make you more sick. And this is what I hear anecdotally from the hundreds of healthcare workers around the country that I have talked to, Sam. It's very, very common for them to say, I never get the vaccine, I never get the flu, or I rarely get the flu, but then all of my peers who get the flu vaccine every year, they're the ones who are taking time off every year to stay home because they're sick with the flu. And, you know, anecdotal evidence doesn't prove anything scientifically, but in this instance, it backs up some of the scientific evidence we see in the medical literature.
Well, and here's where I'm at on the whole topic. You know, I agree with you that, hey, I might influence people not to take vaccines because I've done a lot of research and I'm convinced they're more dangerous than helpful in most cases. However, I do agree that it's a risk-reward analysis. And if I lived in a third world country where there were all kinds of outbreaks of diseases and there wasn't the sanitary conditions and the things that I believe really decrease your risk factor, then I may consider taking some vaccines. I know that a lot of people just say they're evil and everything, but I'm just being very forthright and candid to me that it's a risk-reward analysis. My problem is when they don't allow people to assess the risk themselves based on transparency and fact, and they just want to force this on someone, even though we see clearly, as you wisely point out, that this is absolutely a debate of how valuable the vaccine really is. And on one hand, they say even at best, the flu vaccine is what, 50-60% effective. Then when they say they missed the target and don't even have the right, quote, strain included in the vaccine, they say, well, golly, it's still effective. It's still safe. I don't find it to be safe or effective. If people get the flu after they've had the shot, not only are they, one, sick, but two, likely to get others sick, sir. But here's the problem that I have. Why then, with such mixed results, would they continue to force this on us? Is it only money, or is there even a greater agenda? And this would smack at even a greater agenda. Why would you put everybody at risk for money? If it's really so deadly, really so evil, really such a problem, why would you ever in your right mind, just for money, put people at risk? And there becomes a serious ethical issue.
Well, I've become convinced, and Sam, I was very slow to come to this position over a period of many years, but I've become convinced that with regard to the larger vaccine controversy as a whole, that money really is just an implementation tool. The way you control people is with fear and money. So there's definitely, you know, it's a multi-billion-dollar industry. There's no question that money is driving a lot of this at some level. But if you trace this back far enough, you usually, as many of the large controversies of our day, not just the vaccine controversy, you trace it back far enough, you end up with international bankers, people who have more money than you need to buy anything there is you can buy. And as somebody I think eloquently put it, you know, when you're a millionaire, you get to play. You get to buy the houses, the planes, the vacations, and whatever. When you're a billionaire, you're a whole different order of magnitude. And at that level, you control populations. And so these people operate outside of political and legal boundaries in their manipulation and control of, to one degree or another, virtually all of us on the planet. And they don't need money in terms of buying anything. They've already got everything they want that money can buy, but they can use money to manipulate the rest of us who don't have everything that money can buy. And a lot of people can be controlled and are controlled by money. So I think it's a control for probably other agendas, as you're suggesting. So there are different levels and layers to it. But if I can, real briefly, and we can come back to that absolutely if you want, but I just wanted to address your issue of cost analysis. One aspect of that, over the last 25 years, on average, the federal government has paid out over $110 million per year to victims of vaccines.
Now, you really mean that we, the taxpayers, have paid that, right?
Right, right. That's what the word government means, right? Taxpayers? So,
yeah, I just want to make that clear, though, that we're paying for it, even though I disagree with it.
Right, and right. We don't have a choice about that either. But that $110 million, which is, if you factor in the government paid attorney's fees in these in the vaccine court system, the total is over $3 billion to date. However, there are people even from within the CDC and the FDA, among other sources, who estimate that only about 1 to 10% of the serious vaccine adverse events ever even get reported. So we really have no clue what the true scope of vaccine injury and death is. The data is not available. And so it's really difficult, if not impossible, to make any sort of really precise or accurate cost-benefit analysis. And this leaves a lot of people, those who are aware of this, feeling like even more so, as you were saying, that we should have the right as individuals to make that assessment. And if you make that assessment with the healthcare practitioner of your choice, there's a range of possible outcomes. You know, there the so-called anthroposophical medical doctors, their policy is that they recommend you get the tetanus and polio vaccines because they believe that the other childhood infectious diseases are beneficial to get. It strengthens the immune system, and there's research showing there's lower incidence of cancer and other chronic diseases if, for example, you had measles and mumps as a child. So healthy people will almost always recover from these childhood diseases, and you're actually have a stronger immune system after going through those childhood diseases. But there's no benefit to polio and tetanus, so they say get those two vaccines. But none of the rest. So the point is there are many different positions, from none to all to various positions in between.
I think all those positions, whether I agree or disagree with some of them, have their place. And I think anybody should be free to arrive at whatever spot they choose.
Exactly.
Okay, I might even disagree with their choice. I might say personally I think they're goofy. But that's my right and that's their right. That's the point.
Right, right. And you know, when is it the place of government to dictate healthcare policy? Of course, you know, you and I might argue that constitutionally probably should be never, but what we're seeing is more and more of it, and don't get me started on Obamacare, other than to say, Sam, we'll have to come back and talk about this one in more depth if you want, because I'm working on information and article right now, but Obamacare has a religious exemption, but the language of the law requires that you be a member of a particular religious sect and that you give up other government rights and so forth. All of that stuff blatantly violates the First Amendment. So it is possible, may be possible, we'll have to see how it plays out, it may be possible for many, many people to exercise a religious exemption to Obamacare individual insurance mandate, because under the Constitution, under the way the courts have interpreted the First Amendment, free exercise of religion, it doesn't even matter if you belong to any organized religion at all. And it doesn't matter which one you belong to if you do belong to one. What matters is, do you have a belief that is religious in nature, which is very, very broad.
But my response is this, though, whether it's religious or not in nature, whether it's a religious belief or just my belief, I believe that there needs to be an appropriate respect for my opinion, my belief, whether it's religious-based or not. What if I say I don't believe in God? Now, personally, I disagree with this. But just, I mean, I don't believe in God at all. But I believe that, you know what, vaccines are evil. I don't believe that I should put something in my arm and shoot some toxic syrup in there. And I don't want to do it. And I've researched the ingredients. And I say it's bogus. And I don't want to do it. And I don't believe in God either. I don't believe in God and I don't believe in vaccines. Now, that's not Sam Bushman. I'm just making this fictitious character up. The point is they should have that right to their belief, too.
Well, I agree with you 100%, but there's two different – I'm trying to make a distinction here. With respect to the laws that are currently in place, And first of all, the way that the U.S. Supreme Court has interpreted the free exercise of religion, it does not have to include a belief in God in the Western theological sense of the word God. It still has to be what's called religious in nature for a religious exemption. Now, I think we should have a right, religious or otherwise. I agree with you absolutely there. But with respect to laws that are offering a religious exemption to vaccines, or as I was starting to discuss, there's language in Obamacare that does refer to a religious exemption to the individual insurance mandate. Under the First Amendment, as it's been interpreted by the Supreme Court, you don't even have to have a belief in God in the Judeo-Christian sense of that word or Western theological sense. It still has to be religious in nature. It can't just be any sincerely held belief. Now, we should be working to pass laws to give us the right, regardless of whether it's religious in nature or not. And I agree absolutely with that. Everybody should have a right to decide on a philosophical basis or personal basis whether they want a vaccine or not, whether they want insurance or not, for that matter. But just wanted to let you know, because I hear people talking minimally about the Obamacare exemptions at all, but never about the religious exemption. And I called into the, whatever they call it, the marketplace thing, the government thing, and they have a list of scripts to answer questions.
Yeah, it's healthcare.gov. It's considered the marketplace. That's right.
Right. So I called in and asked about the religious exemption, and the guy says, I don't have any information. This isn't in any of our scripts. So I had to go to a supervisor to even get any information about the religious exemption, which I think was fascinating. That's how hard they're working to hide this so that nobody figures out what's going on there.
And it also goes to show why we make the claim that we want transparency. We want people to be able to figure out what they believe and what they want to do and what they... I went to the National Vaccine Information Center. It's NVIC.org. And they have a couple of phrases that I think, Alan Phillips, you and I would completely 100% agree with. And one of them says this: another epic fail for influenza vaccine. And that's what we're talking about here. But yet, even though the epic fail, and even though it's documented with even government sources about the epic fail, they're still pushing hard to force it on people. And just because you become a health worker, that doesn't mean you give up your God-given rights or your freedom of conscience or religion or beliefs or anything else. The question becomes, when is it going to come to us? When is it going to be you and me forced to? I think all attorneys ought to have it. I think all talk show hosts for sure need to. I mean, come on.
Well, I saw an article just recently. It's already starting. They're starting with the healthcare workers, by the way, because they're going to hold them up as a model for the rest of the country. Look, all your healthcare professionals are vaccinated. It must be good. And, of course, they'll conveniently leave out the part about they're vaccinated because they'd lose their job if they didn't get the vaccine. And so we're all supposed to just blindly jump on board and say, oh, it must be good. Go get your flu shot, or you're a bad, evil person for putting everyone at risk. And then the flu shot, we have to understand, too, is also just a door opener. There are literally hundreds of new vaccines in development. I read a figure, it's been a few months ago now, there were over 270 new vaccines that were already
waiting. Yeah, I think we ought to have an anti-vaccine vaccine, a vaccine for those who aren't really for vaccines. Somehow we could give them a vaccine and they might not be so against vaccines. I'm just saying. All right, Alan Phillips with us, attorney at law, ladies and gentlemen. VaccineRights.com, PandemicResponseProject.com. More in seconds. You are listening to Liberty Roundtable Live.
Protecting your liberties. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
Many of you have heard me talk about my Vigor score. You say, Sam, what on earth is all this Vigor stuff about? Well, Vigor is defined as zest for life, your strength in body and mind, your energy levels. It's kind of all wrapped into a term called Vigor. Would you like to improve your Vigor score? Well, you got to first take the free test. Get a hold of Kurt, C-U-R-T, at LibertyRoundtable.com, or call Kurt Cosby at 801-669-2211. I took the test, got a 13 out of 32. Horrible, huh? But I worked on it with Kurt with some natural help and healing, and before you know it, now I've got an astounding 29 out of 32 on the Vigor score. Can you tell by the way I talk? Oh, yes, my zest for life has never been better. Get a hold of Kurt Cosby. That's 801-669-2211. And take your free Vigor test today, and you can learn where you stand. And then you can work on improving it and take the test again. And, oh, compare the results. You will be delighted. Get a hold of Kurt Cosby. Kurt, C-U-R-T, at LibertyRoundtable.com, or 801-669-2211 for your free Vigor score test today.
We fought We learned. We struggled. We won. Despite Obama's best efforts, the newspaper of the human resistance survives. We have lived only to face a new nightmare, the war against the machines. Read about our struggle in The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The Sovereign is a 24-page monthly tabloid newspaper about the war between man and machines. We've tried reason, we've tried legislation. We've tried every peaceful means imaginable, and all it's gotten us is shut out. So now we fight the machines. Order online today at thesovnews.com or find The Sovereign at select newsstands. Remember to read The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The human resistance's battle against the machines will be everlasting. This is mercy. It was never our destiny to stop the age of Obama. It was merely to survive it. Together. Together.
Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center. Where heritage and responsibility instill character. Where educating both hearts and minds brings about academic excellence. There is a school in American Fork where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental. Where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. Based on LDS principles and a love of country, now in our 39th year, American Heritage School is accepting fall enrollment for kindergarten through high school. What would you do for your child? Give them an education that will prepare them for life. Located east of the Temple in American Fork, American Heritage School is a remarkable and affordable alternative. Visit us, find us online, or in the Yellow Pages. American Heritage School in American Fork.
Begging politicians, bureaucrats, and educrats, and all do-gooders to please obey the supreme law of the land, the Constitution. This is Liberty Roundtable.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, vaccine companies want the ability to text parents. I kid you not, vaccine companies want to use texts to advertise or promote immunizations to parents. They want to text the heck out of you until you accept them, says Natural News. This is the kind of stuff we're talking about, ladies and gentlemen. At some point, it becomes harassment. At some point, this force is just out of control. And I kind of joked right before the break that they ought to get a vaccine that they could give those folks that are anti-vaccines to make them shut up and go along. This is the kind of stuff we're talking about, though, folks. It's not simple. And what we want to do is give people transparency and choice. And the National Vaccine Information Center has a pretty interesting tidbit that I think is valuable. It says this: vaccination, defending your right to know and freedom to choose. That's what I support, defending your right to know and freedom to choose. National Vaccine Information Center, your health, your family, your choice, NVIC.org. But what about this idea where they want vaccine companies to use text messages to harass the heck out of you, Alan Phillips, if you don't have vaccinated children?
Well, all of this, Sam, comes from a place of this is in the best interest of the public health, and so we need to take these extra measures. And that's vaccines are different from everything else because they are necessary for public health, and so that gives them an exception in so many different arenas that you would never deal with anything else the same way. So the manufacturers are free from any liability for the death or disability caused by the vaccines because that's the price we need to pay as a society because vaccines are so critically important and necessary. That's the the mentality. And so, operating from that same place of we're above everything else because this is necessary for public health, they're going to get exceptions in all different arenas. You wouldn't want to be and wouldn't be allowed to be texted randomly for any and every product in the world. Somebody would love to be able to do that to market their products. But with vaccines, it's okay. Or there's another...
But here's the question. Article. And I asked this question to a health worker one time, this lady that was totally pro-vaccine. I said, I appreciate the vaccines and I appreciate that you have your opinion that everybody ought to take all of them. But I said, you know, and I realize that some people are against them 1,000% would never take any no matter what. I find myself somewhere in the middle, which means really there's a line somewhere for everybody. Where's that line for you? And I said, you know what? What if right now they got, what, 100 vaccines? Who knows? Whatever, depending on the municipality you live in and whatever. 100 and something, whatever. Okay. What if it became 1,000? What if it became 5,000? At what point? It's kind of like asking a government school educator how much money would the government school need to do well. The answer is, well, we don't know. It's just not enough. And we don't know when it will be enough, but just give us more and we'll work on it. When will be enough vaccines? And when will they find, when will we say, you know, golly, we've kind of reached the breaking point. This is enough vaccines, or we've got too many, or they're not necessary, or you know what, this illness is greater threat than this other one now. Let's drop this vaccine. When are they going to drop any, and when will be enough? Isn't that a fair question?
Yeah, it is a fair question, because what's underneath the question is what's really the motive here, and what's the real agenda? Is there a legitimate agenda here, and if so, how does the use of vaccines reasonably and appropriately fit with a proper agenda? But once you start going beneath the surface and looking at agendas and looking at the science, whether you want to call it the real science or the contradictions within, let's say, the peer-reviewed published medical literature, there's a medical doctor, Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, who put together a website called the Vaccine Research Library, and it's just those words, vaccineresearchlibrary.com, and she has a couple of staff members doing research and regularly adding to this pool of studies that she has, and presently she has something on the order of 6,500 peer-reviewed published medical studies that show problems with vaccines. You know, at best, anybody in a Prozac vaccine arena can say only that the medical literature is conflicted on the issue. It's not like there's three or four, bizarre studies out there that claim to find something wrong, but we have, you know, the vast majority of the medical literature validates the vaccine policy. No, it doesn't. There's a profound, not even substantial, I'd say profound body of medical literature that argues against current vaccine policy and law, and yet somehow we never hear about that.
Well, and to me, they're never going to start to drop vaccines from the list, because if they do, they admit, well, they may not be that needed after all. There's this inherent idea that it's not transparent, it's not canned, that it's not an appropriate risk-reward analysis, and therefore they won't drop any of them. Because if they do, then, well, let's say they drop the flu vaccine, just for example.
Well, they've dug themselves into a hole or backed themselves into a corner, however you want to think about it, because by taking this 100% all-or-nothing kind of position, then the more evidence that comes to light that there are problems with vaccines, that maybe the policy is flawed in some way, they have put themselves in the position, for whatever reason, that they just keep trying to deny anything and everything that suggests a concern or problem, and to take this, you know, 100% yes, they're safe and effective, end of story. And over the short term, that has gained them tremendous mileage. You know, people should be able to look to their state and federal health authorities and trust them implicitly and follow their advice. But unfortunately, we live in a world where things are just not that clear and clean, and we have a society today that is substantially controlled or influenced by industry, and industry controlling government policy and laws. And so it's not a simple cut and dried, yes, they're fine, shut up and go back to your business. But by taking this all-or-nothing position, they've set themselves up for a huge crash at some point, because once the so-called 100th monkey is reached, once we reach this critical mass point in terms of the awareness, it's going to blow wide open. And the people.
And I think we're starting to see some of that as they blatantly admit that, hey, the flu vaccine missed the mark this time. It was an epic failure, and they're still saying get it, but at some point people are going to start to say, uh-uh, And at some point when they start to have too many shots where it's just not reasonable to give them to people, people are going to say, you know what, I just can't get shots for the first 2 years of my child's life every other day. I mean, at some point, and we're arriving there. I mean, there's over 100 vaccines that are virtually recommended and bordering on mandated, right?
Yeah, and the number just keeps, you know, growing and growing. There's no light at the end of the tunnel. It was sort of the idea I was alluding to earlier, that this aggressive agenda is playing out at multiple levels, and one of these levels is in the state legislatures. Sam, just a few months ago, because I haven't looked real recently, there were over 100 vaccine bills pending in over 30 states, and sometimes as many as 5 or 6 in an individual state. And it's an aggressive legislative arena, and the vast majority of those laws or bills, if passed into law, will mandate even more vaccines for students, vaccines for entirely new categories of adults. More and more pharmacists are being allowed to administer vaccines, which is really troubling because they aren't trained to deal with, you know, anaphylactic shock. You know, if somebody, there's even flu shot drive-throughs now, which is crazy because you can get a vaccine, a flu shot or other vaccine, and you can go into anaphylactic shock. Somebody drives through the window, gets their flu shot, and 2 minutes later they're driving down the middle of the highway and go into anaphylactic shock. Who's going to pick up the bill for that one? But and it's not even about the bill as much as it is the tragedy of everyone who's, you know, hurt involved in such a scenario. But it's just ridiculous. Laws are on the books now that allow children to consent to vaccines. This is a procedure that can permanently disable or kill you, and they're letting children make the decision, which is blatantly unconstitutional. But, you know, the bills are there, and at least 2 states already have laws that do that. So it's amazingly aggressive, and there just is no light at the end of the tunnel here.
Well, and then the other problem is, I guess there's right now 14 diseases that are supposedly vaccinated against, and over 49 vaccines expected between 0 and 6. That's kind of on a national scale. Regionality-wise, it's even more, differs slightly from what I understand. But when you look at that kind of a thing and you say, you know, if you take a population that's heavily vaccinated for generations and then all of a sudden you start not having those vaccines, you may have created even a greater crisis, because now that you've given these bodies, these antibodies for some of these things, or a little bit of the disease, so to speak, if you will, and then all of a sudden you take that away, you may create even a bigger crisis, right?
That's an interesting question, and it's a medical one that I don't have clear sense about. But what I can say is that the antibodies that are produced from vaccines are not the same antibodies that are produced from the wild disease. And so, you know, with most diseases, you get the disease and you have lifelong immunity, for example. You get a vaccine and, oh my gosh, the antibodies have waned, you've got to go get a booster shot. And
I'm submitting, if you don't go get your booster shots at that point, at some point you make yourself at greater risk.
Well, there are other things we can do, Sam, that are actually more effective than vaccines, that won't disable or kill you, that are less expensive. For example, there was a real interesting, fully documented instance in Cuba back in the fall of 2008. They have recurring problems with a fever disease called leptospirosis there because of the tropical flooding from hurricanes, tropical storms. And they had, in recent years, conventionally and typically used allopathic immunizations to deal with leptospirosis. Well, in 2008, they used homeoprophylaxis, which is a particular type of homeopathic remedy designed to do essentially the same thing as allopathic immunization.
Now, let's stop there and say it's taken orally as well. It's not a man-made shot, right?
Right, right.
Okay, keep going.
And made from natural substances. And they gave 5 million doses to 2.5 million people. So this is not a study, first of all, of 50 people where you say, okay, but what happens in the real world? This was real world on a massive scale. So they're dealing with 2.5 million people. They had substantially better results. When they have used in the past allopathic immunizations, they'd always have a few deaths. And with the homeopathic remedy, they had no deaths and only very, very few cases of the disease. And it was about 1/15 the cost of allopathic immunizations. And nobody, you know, is permanently disabled or killed by a homeopathic remedy. I have a friend and acquaintance who's been a homeopathic physician for probably something in the order of 20 years or more now, and I asked him a question in recent years. I said, are there any serious adverse effects from homeopathy? And he paused and looks up for a minute and he says, well, sometimes people get a nosebleed and we're not sure why that happens. You know, so I'm thinking, let me see, nosebleed, anaphylactic shock, nosebleed, permanent disability, nosebleed.
Absolute death. Paralysis. Nosebleed.
I'm going to go with the nosebleed risk, you know.
Well, and that brings up the issue, though, with that massive study from Cuba. Why at what, a sixth of the cost, you said?
It was a 15th of the cost. It was,
1/15 of the cost. Okay, I was thinking 15%, 1/6. Okay, 1/15 of the cost. Nobody dies. How's the success rate?
Yeah, and they were more successful. They had no deaths from the disease or from the homeopathic remedies, of course, and very, very few cases of the disease. I don't have these precise statistics in front of me, but it wasn't like it was, you know, 5 or 10% better. It was just substantially more effective. And you would think, of course, if public policy were about what's the best health at the least cost, that health departments all over the country and all over the world, for that matter, would be all over this, and they would be looking to study this more closely, and does it work for other diseases, and so forth. Now, homeoprophylaxis is something that's been used in different countries around the world for the last couple of hundred years, and so there's lots of historical evidence showing that it's effective at preventing infectious disease, and homeopathy can be a very effective way of treating infectious disease as well. You know, pertussis, one of its claims to fame under allopathic treatment is that it can take several weeks, a month or more sometimes, to recover from the disease. The same homeopath that I was telling you about said he had treated pertussis in his practice, and it takes him about a week to recover on homeopathic remedies. So, you know, is that necessarily the answer for everyone else? Maybe not, but it is certainly an answer and one worth investigating. But obviously, as you keep pointing out, and I agree wholeheartedly, there are other agendas. Agendas other than public health that are driving public health policy.
Now, just imagine in Cuba, if you could take that natural solution at about 1/15 of the cost with incredible success rates, no death, no injury, and then what if you added nutrition and better sanitary conditions to that? Meaning, I'm not saying that there's not nice places in Cuba. What I am saying is a lot of the problem for many of these people and the reason the flooding and the fever and all these things happen is because they don't have the ability to clean up their environment and create sanitary conditions for themselves in many cases. And just imagine if you added the sanitary conditions and a proper nutrition to these folks. Just think what levels of success you could achieve then.
Right, and this is another real interesting point you bring up, Stan, because when we look at the official government statistics here in the U.S. and other Western countries, what we see is that the vast majority of infectious disease decline, the childhood infectious disease decline in the 1900s preceded the introduction of vaccines. It was like on average 90 to 95% of the disease reduction preceded the introduction of the vaccines. And why was there that reduction? Well, a lot of that was the development and evolution of sanitary conditions, food preservation, and various things. And I won't try to say that in today's world, the average American has a particularly nutritious diet, but when you compare it to third world countries and what some people have or don't have, for that matter, access to, and it's just amazing, too, Sam, when you think about that reality, that it was these other changes, not the introduction of vaccines, but these other changes in sanitation and diet, nutrition, and so forth, that at minimum have a very strong correlation with the substantial decline in infectious disease. Why should we be spending millions and billions of dollars trying to get vaccines to third world families and children if we're not first spending that money on improving their sanitation?
Yeah,
and
clean water, appropriate facilities for restroom, nutrition, etc.
Right.
And I think that's where we ought to start, and I would submit to you that it's wicked governments that want population reductions at the helm of this. And there's great ways to solve the world's problems many times over, and we've talked about this before. But my whole focus on this is I think that people need choice. I think people need opportunities and places where they can learn. And you gave us a great resource, vaccineresearchlibrary.com, right?
Yes. People can go there and get access. Now, you can have a short-term free access. It is a subscription service because Dr. Tenpenny is looking to fund the project. She's not trying to make a profit, but she's having to hire people to go through the medical literature and find the studies that are every week there are new studies added to this pool of studies. So there is a cost if you want to access it over the long term. But if somebody has a short-term project, you can go there and sign up and go through the free period and do your research and pull up the studies. But
well, if you have a long-term project, it's not too much money either, though.
No, not at all. And I mean, they've done all the work for you, basically. You know, you just search for whatever particular topic you're looking for, but you don't have to scour through all of the medical literature to find the studies that are talking about problems with vaccines. They've pulled all those together for you and put it in one place.
Arm yourself with the facts, ladies and gentlemen. VaccineResearchLibrary.com, NVIC.org is for the National Vaccine Information Center, VaccineRights.com, and PandemicResponseProject.com. Our attorney, Alan Phillips, has websites, and he can help you legislatively. He can help you individually. He can help you with your right to choose. What can we best do then if they're trying to mandate this flu vaccine? First, it's the healthcare workers. Who knows who will be next, but eventually they want to get at least 80% of us, they claim. How do we best fight this, Alan?
Well, the first step, of course, is awareness. You can't deal with a problem until you understand that there is a problem. But, Sam, I think, you know, just being aware in and of itself, I don't think it's going to help much.
Yeah, it's kind of like faith without works is dead, right?
Yeah, good point. I mean, a real good analogy there. It's I think the primary place where the rubber meets the road in this issue, I believe, is in the state legislatures. Now, the bottom line is we need to become legislatively active, but there are some ways to do that that don't require a whole lot of time and energy. You don't have to take on a part-time job and become a legislative advocate, although certainly there are people who, myself included, who have done that. And it's critical that we have people in those roles. But once again, the National Vaccine Information Center has put together a tremendous project. It's called the NVIC Advocacy Portal. And there's a website, NVICAdvocacy.org. NVICAdvocacy.org, and anybody can sign up for free. And the site is there so people can monitor what's going on legislatively on the vaccine issue around the country. And you can sign up, and their goal eventually is to have a director for every state. But it's a way that you can stay in touch. You can put in your, if you sign up formally, you can put in your address information, which they keep confidential, so that means that only the NSA has access to it. And they will, a little bit of a dig there, and they will plug it, you know, take that information and they can use it to tell you who your representatives are and what their contact information is. And the point is this, if you're a member of the NVIC Advocacy Portal, then you can be on top of what's going on legislatively in your state with vaccines. And whenever there's an action item, you may be notified about that, so then you can call or write a letter, send an email, or what have you. But with respect to the flu vaccine in particular, we need to be ideally sitting down face-to-face with our state representatives. And I say sitting down face-to-face because you send an email or a letter, it goes into a black hole, nobody ever sees it, and if you ever get anything back at all, it'll be a form letter that doesn't address your issues. That's just my experience. I really think, if at all possible, you need to schedule a face-to-face meeting or a telephone meeting. But I, Sam, I've put together a document that's a self-contained package, or people can use it in addition to other things if they want to. But it's available on my website. People can call me or email me if they can't find it. But there's also an article on Natural News called How to Eliminate Employee Influenza Vaccine Mandates. But in any event, go to the article or give me a call or send me an email. It's all my contact information is at vaccinerights.com. And I have a self-contained document. It's a one-page summary, what we need, what kind of law we need, why we need it, and some specific examples. There are states that already have some laws in place that do this. And then I have attached to that And you need a one-page summary because legislators are inundated all the time by people trying to get them to help with their cause. And, you know, there's volumes of information we wish our legislators would read about vaccines, but they're not going to take time to read volumes of information. So you need to really give them the one-page summary and sort of a sound bite so they can get what's going on. But in any case, I have that one-page summary, but then I have attached to that all of the referenced information that backs it up, the peer-reviewed published medical literature, the sites, the information about the National Vaccine Injury Compensation Program and the more than $110 million that's paid out every year. And by the way, Sam, the majority of that now is paid out for influenza vaccines and deaths, more than all the other vaccines put together. And then the information that I think is important at the very end, where I talk about how the pharmaceutical industry is the largest violator of the Federal False Claims Act. Pharmaceutical companies routinely are assessed criminal fines in the hundreds of millions of dollars, and there have even been billion-dollar criminal fines. This is an industry that routinely engages in massive criminal behavior, and it has no business partnering with government for public health or any other purposes. And we need to start underscoring these realities with our state representatives so they can understand there really is a legitimate reason for us to have the right to say no thank you to vaccines if that's our choice.
And if you want an indictment of them and their agenda and who they are and everything else, there it is, right?
Yep. Yep. So I recommend people get involved at whatever level you can. You know, if there's no way you're going to have time to meet or talk to your representative, but at least go to the NVIC advocacy portal and sign up so you can stay abreast of what's going on and you can send that letter or email or whatever when there's an action item to do.
But you can also fund those who are doing something. You can pay to be part of that library. You can fund Alan Phillips. You can fund Liberty Roundtable. You can fund NVIC.org. Everybody needs funds and support for the hard work that we're doing as well. So either join us in part of the work with your time and your efforts and your talents or money, whatever. However you fit in, please get involved in this critical issue. That is your right to choose. Thank you, Alan Phillips.
My pleasure, Sam.
VaccineRights.com, his website, PandemicResponse.com, another website as well. Get his paper, learn about it, get the one-page summary to your legislators immediately. Become part of the answer today, we beg you, please. Thanks for being alongside for the ride. You want to turn your phone into a radio, it's simple and free. Smile and dial 712-432-5339 or LibertyRoundtable.com. Along with the grace of the Almighty, we the people can and will restore America. You gonna help? Thanks.